Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
There's no reason to touch them.
And inform you in the afternoon.
I think your cheeks are a little loose.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We got three already. We got eight left. I'm very proud of you guys. This is a good team and we know it. We got Houston. Let's go.
All right, so let's go, Maz. That's Alex Cora in the locker room on Tuesday night, whatever the other night when they clinch over New York. That's Alex Cora talking to his team in the clubhouse at Yankee Stadium. We're a good team. We got Houston. Let's go. Great post-game speech, by the way.
Oh, look, it was awesome. I mean, given that we got a couple of Dunkin' Donuts in the building, I got a little crawler in my shorts just listening to it. Like, really, again, it's and obviously, look, what I like about it is, hey, we believe in ourselves. You know, we know we're good. And then the fact that he's emphasizing the next one.
Less is more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, emphasize the next one. Like, I'm starting to sort of turn the page now and starting to go forward again. In the aftermath of that New York game, I think you sort of do want to celebrate the moment because it's the postseason now. It's a little different. But then you get to the next day and you're like, okay, here you go. It's time to start thinking about Houston. You move on, you go forward, and I give them a shot in the series. I mean, a good shot. I think Houston's favored. And I've seen different Vegas odds that favor one or the other, which tells you it's pretty close. In my mind, Houston's a better team, but I absolutely give them a shot.
Yeah, it's high, especially if they're able to pitch the way that they did in this last series. And if the bullpen looks like it did in that last game, in Game 4 in New York. So, yeah, I give them a shot.
Okay, so we turn the page as well, and we're going to start with Red Sox. We're coming to you from our Star Market broadcast studio at the TD Garden. Bruins play tonight against Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. To commemorate that, we'll have a Bruins giveaway coming up for you later this hour. We're also going to give away Patriots tickets, so tickets to Sunday night's game against Kansas City. We'll give those away, 4:30. Bruins prize, I'm not sure what it is, but a Bruins prize coming your way later on this hour. So those are the giveaways, but I do want to start with Red Sox. And Maz, you know, I sort of want to ask a question now that the euphoria has sort of subsided, as you said. So you take a day there to just enjoy that win over the New York and mock the Yankees and, you know, praise you and all that, which we did for the most part. Now here we are going to the ALCS, and I ask you, what have the Red Sox accomplished?
To me, right now, they've done what they should have done, which is at a bare minimum, they had to get out of the division series. They couldn't lose in the division series again and claim any sort of, like, level of success, you know, or if they had failed, it had been a failure. Now I feel like they've just at least done what they were supposed to do, but honestly, I still think there's more. Like, I don't look at it and say, well, they're playing with house money now. What if they play the Astros and get their asses kicked? Then aren't they pretty much the same team they were a year ago?
No.
A little better, but
okay, go ahead.
No, a little better. But is it good enough?
I mean, it is to me. The season's...
It is?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Yeah, even if they get swept against the Houston Astros, who I think is clearly a better team. I mean, even though I give the Red Sox a shot, yeah, they had to get out of that first round. After all the talk of, you got to appreciate the 108 wins. The 108 wins were garbage. You know that. You had 300-win teams this year. The American League was weighted. You all know that. That's why I ended up putting the asterisk on. Took it off, because I'm magnanimous that way.
Yeah, or firm but fair.
Yeah, firm but fair. Because, you know, they justified it. They were a good team, and they obviously proved that. But they had to win one round. They weren't able to do that with most of the same core the last couple of years. To me, the season's a success no matter what happens.
Really?
Yeah.
It's over.
Yep.
Oh, my God, are you soft?
I can't mock the 108 wins.
You are soft.
I can still mock the 108.
I can't mock those that say I should appreciate it. They've justified it. They got out of the first round, which they haven't been able to do the last couple of years.
I don't feel that way yet, and I'll tell you why. Because to me, it's not just about getting out of the first round. It was always about playing at the highest level with the big boys and proving you're there and that you belong there. And then if you get into a 6 or 7 game series and it doesn't break your way at the end, then fine, I can live with that. So what I want to see now is a year ago, and when I say it's really not that different than last year, if they get killed by Houston, this is the team that beat them. This is the world championship team. So now you're getting another crack at it. Let's see how far they've advanced. Now, the series is longer. It's 7. It's not 5. But nonetheless, let's see what it looks like. In the first 2 games last year in Houston, they absolutely get their asses kicked. So they now have a better team. They have home field advantage. You can even say Houston's in a somewhat diminished state because Correa is hurt. He's playing with a bad back. Now, but nonetheless, whatever. You know, apples to apples. You're both there. So if they get smoked by this team, Well, I'll look at it and say, okay, you got by the Yankees. That's good. And you get out of the division round. That's good. But you're still a good distance away from ultimately what your goal is, which is a championship. And so that's why, to me, this series is important. It's important to know really whether or not they are on that top tier.
So what did they accomplish? Here's what they accomplished. They did not puke on their shoes.
They avoided disaster. Yeah,
because in the last couple of years, there's been a spinelessness that you could see that was so obvious with this team.
Okay, but golf clap. So you didn't epically choke. So you didn't crap your pants. You didn't give us the opening to mock you for the next 6 months, 8 months, 10 months till you get back in the 12 months till you get back in the playoffs again. So you avoided that. You avoided complete embarrassment and mockery. Great.
Yeah,
what? Hang a banner?
Yeah.
Let's have a parade? Because they avoided complete embarrassment?
Yeah, because it felt like it might have been going the same way after game two. I was ready to have those T-shirts rolled out and to mock this team for the third straight postseason. Bunch of gutless pukes. And they proved that they weren't that.
So let's hang a banner. We're not gutless pukes. Where's the T-shirt?
No, it's good. Yeah, we don't suck.
First to 100, and we're not complete gutless, spineless losers.
It's like the Bruins bumper stickers we were preaching a couple of years ago. This year, we weren't stupid.
I mean, I don't know. That's not much of an accomplishment. You had to win the first round. You should have won the first round. And so you did. Now I think we find out really what you are and what kind of season we can say that it is.
I mean, again, and I've used this phrase over and over again. We knew they were good. We needed to find out if they were great. And now I think you're going against a great team, and we're going to find out at what level they can compete at. Now, look, with regard to that, I'm actually pretty optimistic. I don't think they're going to get smoked.
No, me either.
I don't think they're going to get smoked. I think they're too good to get smoked. And I think they've gotten over a hump that will allow them to really dig in and fight here. And so I think there's, in all probability, at the end of this, I'm going to feel pretty good about where the Red Sox are. But I need to eliminate them getting their asses kicked by the Astros.
I mean, if let's just see how it plays out. I think this is one of those where you have to see how it plays out. If they take them down to the wire and lose a hotly contested Game 7, and Houston goes on and wins a second world championship. You know, in hindsight, I'm going to be fair. I'm not going to say the Red Sox gagged or anything. You know, Houston arguably is a better team. And if it happened, you know, if it just happens like that, it happens like that. So, you know, I mean, let me see. If they lay down, you know, if they lay down and just get schwacked, then that's different too. You know, if they don't show up.
I just don't see it. Even though I think, like I said, Houston.
I mean, I don't see it either, but let me see.
But as good as the offense is and the institutional knowledge that Cora has on this team that he was just working for last year, I can't see that happening.
I mean, what if did you see it happening to Cleveland?
Yeah, what if?
No, I didn't.
So this is my point. It's like I think the Astros are capable of going to a notch that other teams can't go to. And now we need to find out whether or not the Red Sox are at that level or pretty close to it. And to me, that's the big question. Now, again, if they get wiped out, it takes so much of the shine off the season. But if they hang in there and really push it, you know, let alone win. I mean, and again, I'm not ruling that out. You know, if you were to say to me, tilt it one way or the other, I'd say 55-60% towards Houston, right? So I think they're close. But they can't get obliterated and puke on themselves in this series because then they go right back.
All right, so I think someone who's going to be a focal point and has been, but really, in this series, is Cora. And there's a couple different things there. I mean, he's already put his neck on the line with David Price. And again, I'll just reiterate from yesterday, I don't think he's making these decisions himself, especially the between-game stuff. I think these are organizational decisions with input from the analytics crew and Dombrowski and all of this. So, you know, but Cora is the face of it, so his name is on it. But he's already stuck his neck out there with David Price in game two. He comes off a series against New York where he just, you know, once they hit New York, he did everything right. He was like 8-for-8, whatever. I just came up with that number. But, every decision he made worked. Almost literally every decision he made worked once they got to New York. So you're coming off of a series where he's done that. He's already stuck his neck out with David Price. A huge moment where if Price wins that game, Cora can say, you know, I mean, once again, we say, wow, you know, Cora has his finger on it. And then there's all that knowledge of the Astros. I mean, what if the Red Sox pitch really well in this series and there's trends develop, I don't know, up in the zone, away to righties, whatever, you know, whatever sort of thing that we can pick up on, and you say, Well, Cora had it. Cora had it on him. Cora knew the book on them. Cora knew how to attack them. I mean, this is really set up to really play that way for Alex Cora.
No question. Yeah, I mean, look, again, I think, and to me, where the real value comes in is sort of in the psyche of the players. So, like, because that stuff's not on paper. Right, so someone can give them a scouting report with all the numbers you're talking about, and even now with some of the advanced metrics they have of, you know, likes low fastballs, blah, 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 and that's pretty generic too. But you know what I mean. But Cora can say, yeah, this guy's a bitch.
Right.
trust me on this. You know, knock him down once, and he'll be so rattled, we got no problems. Like, it's that type of stuff that I think he can, to me anyway, that he can bring.
Definitely.
And so get in their heads a little. Get in their heads. And hopefully there isn't enough there for them to dig at with the Red Sox, but I think it's tougher. Again, because he knows all the players. They only know the manager. So, to me, there's a real potential benefit there for the Red Sox.
Oh, I mean, there's a setup. I mean, we see it in a lot of sports. It's, you know, in football, we've seen it, where Bill will play one of his former assistants. We just saw it with Patricia. And it's like, you know, and you know, even the bad ones. You know, even it felt like Mangini was able to pick at you a little bit. And Patricia certainly did. And we came out and said, well, you know, Patricia knew that if you bunched them over here that they couldn't, this guy couldn't. You knew they were picking on Chung on that last long touchdown to Mar, blah, blah, blah. And we really have a chance to do that with Alex Cora. I mean, it's really set up for him to come out of this thing. I mean, you think there's wind in his sails now and people are blowing smoke up his keister now? Just wait if they win this series. Just wait. Just wait if David Price wins this game too and they go on to win this series. Oh, man. Forget about it.
Who wants to talk crap now, bitches? Are you not entertained?
On our Facebook Live show last night, our off-air show on Facebook Live last night, I think this was online, not during the show, but someone asked to us, would you rather take this group of coaches in Boston or what we had in, well, call it 2008?
Yeah.
2008, you had Francona, Doc, Claude, Belichick.
Okay, good.
Now you have Cora,
Stevens,
Cassidy, Belichick. Which group do you take?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Isn't that a good Facebook question? I'm sorry I brought it to the real world.
I went with the former. I mean, only because you had the championships there, but you really can't go wrong with either.
And
that's close.
That's just a jump-off point to Cora is getting as much love as Francona did.
Yeah, see, I was just going to say, I give Francona an edge right now.
You have to. He actually did it. Cora's won one round. I mean, he's only played a round. I know that, but I think Cora's like, all right. So you have to think about that right now. Like, you're thinking about Cora in those terms.
It's a good point.
Right? And so, well, there's just your jump-off point.
I mean, even Stevens. Like, and I didn't mean it that way, but you know what I mean.
No. You look at 99 out of 100 Celtics fans would take Stevens.
Doc won a title. Like, Stevens hasn't won anything yet, and yet I look at Stevens and say, boy, tactically, he's pretty good.
It feels that way, except he hasn't won a series he wasn't supposed to win. He hasn't done anything he wasn't supposed to do. When he's had home court, he's won. When he's been on the road, he's lost.
Great question. Did you come up with that on your
own? No, I told you, Facebook.
Listener sent it, right?
Yes, the off-air show.
I figured it had to be someone that wasn't involved with this show.
Monday and Wednesday, 6:15 on Facebook Live. That came last night, so I thought I'd just throw it out here because it sort of ties in. We'll get to your calls. You're all lined up. Again, a Bruins giveaway this hour. Patriots tickets at 4:30, so you want to stick around for that. Your call's next.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't know too much about them. They have a good team. What they did to the Indians, that was impressive. It seems like they're playing their best baseball of the season at the right time. They can pitch. They're playing good defense. They're swinging the bat well. They're a complete team. I've been talking about them the whole season, so now we go. You know, that's a seven. They know me. I know them. It should be fun.
So Alex Cora on the Astros, that the very first line of that comment, he says, I don't know too much about him. And I don't know, you know, second language, he can't really put maybe it's a sarcasm thing, doesn't totally come through. But I think he meant that totally sarcastically.
Absolutely. I thought the same thing. You know, he meant that sarcastically.
He knows a ton about them. And this is set up for him to really come out of this again. You think Cora is getting a lot of love right now? What if Price wins game two and they win this series and you can tell that Alex is using his knowledge of the Astros against him? Like, wait till that happens, or if that happens. All right, so we'll start Red Sox with your calls. You're all lined up. Here we go. Alan in Florida. What do you got, Alan?
Well, first of all, Mike, I just wanted to tell you, you mentioned Brian Anderson. One of the most obnoxious homers I've ever heard is Bob Uecker. So let's not talk about homers doing the...
Those radio guys. Well, that's not fair. All those radio guys are honky. You ever hear John Sterling? I mean, come on.
Of course I heard John Sterling. He's meantime, he's made a fortune doing those stupid things. But how about Susie? Susie with a Roger Clemens call is one of the all-time classics. Classics. I mean, I absolutely positive. First of all, I give the chance. I want Hughes to win, but I'm right on, believe it or not, with Murray. This season is a success. They beat the Yankees. No one thought they were going to do it. They did beat them. And you want to know something? To me, Saturday's game is key. If Sale beats Verlander, which I think he's going to, I think they can win this series. You know, you're talking about a super team.
So, Alan, you thought they were going to lose against the Yankees?
Who thought they were going to lose to the Yankees?
Oh, well, a lot of people did. After the second game, are you kidding? Listen, the whole world thought, forget about it, they're not coming back to Fenway Park. It's all over. They choked again. You know, I have 2 ears.
I didn't hear much of that.
Well, I heard a lot of it. I mean,
I think there was a nervousness.
Yeah, sure, there was a nervousness. They played like crap. And so, we ripped them for playing like crap.
Yeah, but it was the worst fears that come to light. It was the bullpen that was a fire drill on Friday night, and then David Price puking all over himself again on Saturday. Now, I didn't write them off, but I felt like, oh, well, here we go again. These a-holes are doing this 108-win team. They got over that hump. They were the better team in New York. They took it down in game four.
I just disagree with the way Alan characterized it. I picked them to win going into the series, and even after game two, I still picked them to win.
The most negative guys in town never wrote him off and said the series was over. Who we just played? You hear the Adam Jones? The Adam Jones? If Jones didn't have him losing. So is this a Boston thing, or does every sport fan do this?
No, I think this one's largely a Boston. Like the people.
Oh my God, you people are such bitches. It's like whenever your team wins, it's like, oh, how do you like it? No one thought they could do it. Like, what are you talking about? They were favored in Vegas. Everyone picked them. What do you mean no one thought they could do it?
No, they're the little engine that could with 108 wins.
Mike. God!
That's what they are.
Is that, I mean, I it wasn't like that where I grew up, but then we never won, so I never really had a gauge for it. But does this happen everywhere, or is it just you people? Every time you win, you feel stupid now. What are you talking about? I picked them.
So they can't, let's play that Jones promo again.
You know, it's like, what is that? So David Price crapped his pants and your bullpen had a horrible night, and then coming out of those two games, that was what else are you going to talk about? What? Good God! What is it with you folks?
Yeah, like
no one Francis thought they could do it. What? William and Whitman, go ahead, William. What do you got?
Hey guys, I just want to comment. You guys were talking about the insight that Cora had, but I think that the Red Sox have a really good chance of winning this series. I think that beating the Yankees in their own house and then coming back home and the insights that Cora might bring, I think that, the confidence level is going to rise, and I think that the...
Okay, so let me stop. You're talking about two different things. Cora's insight, I think, is on the table, and let's see how that plays out. I'm fascinated to see that. I think you have a real chance to use that to your advantage. The other thing he's talking about, momentum, coming home, having beaten the Yankees, how important is that stuff?
Yeah, I don't think it's that important. It's not as important as everyone thinks. I mean, how important was it for the Yankees going home for Game 3? Like, in retrospect, they get their asses kicked, and they got outscored, what, 20-4?
How important was it to the Yankees coming off the big wild card win?
Well, right, exactly. Yeah, another one.
And they go behind 5-0 immediately in Boston. Was that momentum?
So, look, it's cliche, but at this time of year, it's true. You literally live day to day. And that old expression, momentum is only as good as your next starting pitcher. So that's true. Like, you'll think the Red Sox are feeling good about themselves right now. All that's great. If Sale goes out and gives up a 3-run homer in the first inning, it's over. That's gone. So, like, as soon as they throw the first pitch, it disappears. And people get caught up in the euphoria of what happened the night before. And the reality is that at this time of year, the next game isn't connected at all. Not really. Now, if the Red Sox had blown that game the other night and then shown up for Game 5, then I would tell you there's a little connection.
Yeah, I mean, I would say never. Like, I think sometimes it carries over. I mean, like, I'll just try and find the most obvious examples. When the Red Sox were down 3-0 to the Yankees in 2004, Game 7, they had the wind at their sails and they had momentum and there was definitely a carryover.
Sure. But what I would say, that's an extreme case.
Okay, when the Bruins were down 0-3 to Philadelphia and you got here to Game 7, ooh.
Yeah, pressure.
Okay, so in rare cases it does carry over. I don't think we're there yet.
No, no, and it happens late, usually when someone blows it. Like when you had it wrapped up and over, and then now all of a sudden you go, well, we missed our chance. That will carry over. But generally speaking, the game-to-game thing, not usually.
We've got Walter in Tewksbury. Hi, Walter.
Just a quick question on the institutional knowledge of Cora for Houston. Could you guys liken that to what Matt Patricia's defense did to the Pats' offense? Thank you.
Yes, sir. That's what I said in the first segment. They knew that Pat Chung was going to bite up on a crosser in front of him, so they send Walter Jones. I'm getting all these names.
Marvin.
Sure. Marvin Jones the other way on top of him, and he's wide open. Like I absolutely. And I think it happens in baseball, too. That's why, you know, I feared Cleveland because of Francona and his evil henchman, Millsy. And not that they managed a lot of these players. Like, it's the rosters mostly flipped. There's just still something about I don't know why I would have given Francona that edge, but I just did for some reason.
Because he's still got it in for ownership. That's why.
Yeah, maybe
and, that. And, you know, he'll bear down a little bit more, and maybe he picks up something he otherwise wouldn't have picked up. But in this case, sure, I'm telling you, if, like, I don't know, maybe we don't know that, like I said, Marwin Gonzalez is a little bitch, and Cora knows it. You know what? Put one right under his nose in the game one, and he'll be useless for the rest of the series. Because there are guys like that, that you say you knock them on their ass early, and then all of a sudden they back out of the box a little bit, and now you've got the outside corner for the next four games. Like, and so that type of stuff, oh, you absolutely use it at this time of year.
We've got Billy in Rhode Island. Hi, Billy.
Hi, how you doing, Felga? I think the reason why people are so, on the Red Sox as far as them going to win or not win, that's the biggest rivalry in sports, the Yankees-Red Sox. So the Red Sox fans always worry about playing the Yankees. They really do.
Well, no.
So they lose the second game out of two games. Of course they didn't think they were going to win, but they won.
No, who said that? Who? Again, I want to stop you. I've never got on you for celebrating the win over the Yankees. It's a big win, an important win, and great. Whip it out, man. Do what you got to do. I'm just saying this thing about no one thought we could do it. Like, where does that come from?
No, again, the plucky underdogs with the $240 million payroll and the $111
million.
How did they do it?
Could win that game.
Billy, I'm sorry. I put you on hold, and you kept talking. I guess I should tell him. He just kept going. He probably had a really good thought there that we just totally put on hold.
Do you think his wife, like, what does his wife do when that happens? She goes up, goes to bed, comes down the next morning, he's still in the chair.
Turns down the hearing aid. So I was saying, honey, it was a great lamb you made last night.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
You know what I wonder? Just going back to the psychology of the Sox fan, maybe you felt they weren't going to do it. So don't put your problems and your baggage on me, right? They had a horrible couple of games. Not horrible. They had a rough couple of games in Boston. You split, but the bullpen was horrible. Price was his same old self. There was some stuff that didn't look great. And so they had a rough couple of nights in Boston. And they go back to New York, and you're nervous. You're the one who has the problem, not me. Don't put your baggage on me, pal.
It's called projecting.
Yes. Don't project your doom and gloomism on me. That's what's going on. Maybe that's what's going on there with the Red Sox fan.
I've been working on this, by the way.
That was more like a meat flick.
So, man, Maz is working on his Red Sox twist, as if he just got to second base. But, no, the Yankee stuff, most everyone had the Red Sox in the Yankee series, and even going down to New York for those two games in Boston where they didn't look good. I didn't hear anyone say it was over. Zoe, maybe they've been saying the midday. Zoe wrote him off. I mean, I didn't. You didn't. Jones didn't. I don't. And that's the axis of evil. And Dan Shaughnessy. Like, if we're not writing him off, who is? No one wrote him off. No one wrote him off. But maybe you were nervous, but that's your problem, not mine.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry. Sorry. Wrong. Sorry. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, Felger and Maz again from the Garden, our Star Market broadcast studios at the TD Garden in advance of Oilers Bruins. You'll hear that tonight on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Dunkin' Donuts pregame at 6:30. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. Is that the sponsor for the pregame? pregame at 6:30.
Yes, it's Dunkin' Donuts.
Dunkin' Donuts pregame at 6:30. Thank you. And then the puck drops shortly after 7 p.m. So here on 98.5, the Sports Hub, Connor McDavid, the best player in the NHL, or certainly among the best players in the NHL, the best young player in the league for sure, will be on the ice. So that's worth watching in and of itself. Quick Bruins minute for you here. I have a Bruins giveaway coming. Guess what line is scoreless so far this year?
The Krejci line.
So, again, what was one of the biggest problems on the team last year in the playoffs?
Secondary scoring.
Thank you. Very good, class. They couldn't get goals from anyone other than that top unit. So far this year, through three games, the top unit is playing out of its boobs again. Okay, as usual.
Perfection line.
And through three games,
erection line
should be slapped across the face. I prefer Maz's one versus the perfection line. Who says that should get slapped across the face?
We start calling it the wet sausage line.
That's fine, dude. Eggplant emoji line, whatever. Anything but perfection line. That's so freaking, I can't say the word. Okay, so they're great, but the second line, nothing. Zero. Donut, nothing. No points this year. Zero. Zeros. Donato has a goal, but he scored it on the power play from Marchand. Krejci got a secondary assist when he stepped on the ice with another line.
It was a line change. Pastrnak scored.
Exactly. Okay? So those are their only points. The second unit has not gotten a point as a unit. Zero. Zero. DeBrusk, zero, zero, zero. And so to the point where, well, they started with Heinen up there, right? Because they love themselves some Heinen. Then they went Donato, and now Donato is going to get, I think, moved out for Joakim Nordstrom,
yeah,
who's a fourth liner they signed in the offseason. Was it from Carolina?
Where
is this guy from? Some fourth liner is going to play up there with Krejci and DeBrusk because they don't have anyone for the second line. And they refuse to put Pastrnak down there and give someone else to Bergeron and Marchand, which I think is getting kind of silly. Okay? So it's an issue on the team. There's a long way to go. I'm just telling you, through three games, this thing is already in our face.
Yes, look, there's no question. I mean, it is. It's smacking you around. Bergeron had the hat trick the other day. It's like it's the same thing over and over and over again. It never changes. So I don't get why Guy Cassidy's digging in on it. Now's the time of year to do it, especially where they're playing weak competition.
Come on. So one thing does surprise me, though. In the past, hasn't Krejci been quick to sort of blame the other guys?
Glad you're bringing this up because I was just going to say this, but go ahead.
Well, so I was just reading in the Herald today, Steve Conroy's story. I don't know if it was in the Globe, too, but I just read the Herald Bruin stuff. But Steve Conroy in the Herald, and I don't know who else wrote it. I'm just reading from the Herald, so I don't want to diss anybody. But Steve Conroy in the Herald writes, because he talked to Krejci about it, and Krejci in the past has always been quick to throw these line mates under the bus or to say, you know, always sort of complain about not being given the same guys. And I think he has a case a lot of times, right? He hasn't been given a lot to work with a lot of years. But this year, here's what Krejci said about this so far. He said, quote, "I feel like there's nothing to it. It starts with me. I'm the guy who drives the bus. And we had a really bad game last game," meaning the afternoon game where they were held off the board. "I take full responsibility. In fact, the other night they were 0-4 across the board and minus 2.
Minus 2, right.
In a game they won 6-3. So they win 6-3, but the Krejci line was zeros across the board minus 2. So he says, "I take full responsibility on that. Jake DeBrusk always has his legs. Donato's been good on the puck. Strong, yeah. There are some things we have to address as a line defensively, but at the same time, it's on me. I had a bad game, and I have to get my feet moving. I have to make my line mates better." Again, he goes on. "I don't have to adjust anything. I just have to play my game, and I haven't done that," Krejci said. "It's all on me. I wouldn't read too much into it. If I play well, my line plays well. If I don't, they don't. It's on me." I read that, and I'm like, woo, who got to David Krejci?
So that's what I was thinking. Someone said something to him. Maybe it was Cassidy, right? Because Cassidy feels like, or Sweeney, because Sweeney got through to Marchand at the end of last season, or certainly pulled him aside and told him what their expectations were with regard to licking people in the future. So I'm wondering if they did. I wonder if they sat down Krejci and said, "Hey, look, we're just going to let you know here up front, okay? This is about you. It's not about your right wings anymore. It's about you. So we're leaving Pastrnak with Bergeron." And if this is what their methodology is, that they're trying to stoke Krejci, then I like it. Like I told you, I just assume put Pastrnak on the second line.
But they're saying, "We're not going to give in to you and give you the..."
Correct.
You know, you're good enough to figure this out.
So if that's what it is, then I like it.
Well, this thing tonight, I think, is a message to Donato. You know, he's a healthy scratch for this Joaquin Andujar, who's typically a fourth liner.
Joaquin Andujar. Would you stop with this? Joachim Nordstrom. Would you give me the lineup tonight? Because I haven't even seen it.
Sure.
I just know they were working Nordstrom with Krejci in practice yesterday. So Donato's out, period.
Yeah.
Is Heinen still in?
Yeah, Heinen, Backes, Bjork on the third line. Fourth line is Wagner, Corrali, and Achari.
This freaking Heinen. Zeros.
Oh, yeah, no, and he can't be touched.
Zeros.
They
love him.
Oh, yeah, you can't touch him. Teflon Heinen.
All right, but anyway, there's been a little bit of an attitude adjustment with David Krejci, which is refreshing. I mean, these quotes, you know, even going back in history, where I think rightly in some years he's had a case. You know, they stick him with this, that, and the other. And he says, people have been talking about for a while about me getting line mates. It doesn't really matter, he said. As long as I bring my A game, as long as I do, I'll make the people around me better. I haven't done that in these three games. Everything comes back to me. I put a lot of pressure on myself. I expect to be better. Those three games are behind me. I'll be ready tonight. So, like, wow.
No, somebody aired him out. I mean, and I say aired him out.
But for him to take it the way he has is, you know, kind of impressive. I'm like, wow.
Well, you know, maybe the old expression, light is dawning over Marblehead, that they tried to trade his ass during the offseason, maybe. Maybe that got through to him, too. I mean, let's face it. He's not playing up to the salary, and he hasn't in some time. So if I'm the Bruins and you try to move him and you can't, you say to him, where do you want us to move you? No one will take you. You don't play to your level anymore.
Well, if you believe, and I do to some extent, that it starts with just saying the right thing, and it's the rest is sort of easier to follow, then at least Krejci's saying the right thing, finally. All right, there's your Bruins Minute. Might as well, since we're here at the Garden, you can weigh in on it if you like to. I'm giving you a Bruins prize coming up next, a Bruins giveaway coming up next with your phones in our long commercial-free segment, so don't go anywhere.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
All right, Bruins giveaway coming up later on this segment. Calls right now, as promised. Shane in Rhode Island has a Red Sox thought. Hi, Shane.
Hey, guys. I hadn't heard those crazy quotes before. That was interesting. But the Red Sox, who are you guys picking? I called Jones last night and gave him credit for picking the Astros this series, but if you guys pick somebody, I don't know. I missed it. Who do you think's going to win?
So, all right, official picks. You know, usually pick it and stick it.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Astros in seven. Astros in seven. Astros in seven.
So that's where I'm leaning to. I know the final two games are here. I just think
I know. So that's my issue. That's sort of my hang-up. Like, I think home field is a issue, like a big thing in your favor.
It would typically, you know, and again, we didn't see it in games one and two against the Yankees, but typically in this ballpark, they're hard to beat in October.
But in, you know, in baseball, it generally doesn't matter. But I think, I don't know, maybe that's changing. Because I think some of these stadiums, I think Houston feels like a hornet's nest.
It is.
New York is a hornet's nest, and you took a dump all over them down there, so maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know. Is Houston going to come in here and, you know, beat you in game seven? But I mean, that's what I feel. I feel Houston's just a little bit better than you, and that's going to show over seven games. So if I had to lean, you know, if you're putting me to it, I'm saying Houston. But and this isn't – I think the Red Sox have a good chance.
Sure they do.
You're just asking me to pick it. I mean, in Vegas, it's a pick 'em.
It's close to a toss-up. Yeah.
It's a pick 'em. So, like, if the Red Sox win – and you call someone and go, well, you didn't think they were going to do it. Like, that's just so dumb. It's like it's a close series. The teams are evenly matched. It's a pick 'em in Vegas. You know, I'm not telling you that one team's going to put it up on the other. No one's going to sweep each other. Both teams are good. They're going to compete. And so I think it's going to go deep, and I'll give Houston the edge because I think they're a little bit better than you.
So I think you're looking at a six or seven gamer. I don't think this thing's going to be over fast. I think it's going to take a while because I think they're pretty close. But if you force me to pick, I'm picking Houston. And ultimately it's going to be because of that rotation.
I was going to say, okay, if you just handicap the starting pitching, how does it go?
Houston.
Okay. Verlander, Sale.
I mean, if Sale – I'll call that one even. I mean, that one to me is pretty close.
Okay. Sale. I'll give it Sale. Cole Price.
Cole.
Cole's torching it, isn't he?
Yeah. Yes. There were stretches he was their best pitcher this year.
I mean, and if you saw any of that second game, oh, my God. He might have been the most impressive guy I've seen in any postseason game yet. Now, can he replicate it? I don't know, right? But in that game, he was ridiculous.
Who's your third starter?
What's his name? The lefty. Keuchel.
Keuchel pitched. Oh, God, Dallas Keuchel. I forgot. Former Cy Young winner.
Keuchel pitched the third one for them.
So Keuchel Evaldi.
Eileen Keuchel.
Keuchel.
Yeah, I mean, they get the better pitcher.
He's just more proven.
Yeah.
I mean, Evaldi's great against New York, but, I mean, I don't know. I just think Keuchel, when that line comes out, Keuchel's going to be favored.
I mean, remember, Cleveland scored 6 runs in the series. 6. And they hit 144. So I just, and Houston's got power arm. Keuchel's not a power arm. But
who's their fourth?
So it's either going to be, I don't know.
McCullers?
I don't think. I thought it was going to be maybe Morton. Is Morton even out? I don't know who their fourth guy
is. Okay, so whoever it is, Porcello. Even if you give it to Porcello.
Their depth chart says Morton fourth, McCullers fifth.
Okay. So, I mean, let's just give that to Porcello to be fair. All right? So the Astros have 2, you have 2. Who has a better bullpen?
They do.
Okay? So it's like, and the lineup, I think, are even to maybe slight edge there.
No, I agree. I mean, I think they have more talent than you. I think Houston's the most talented team in baseball. So the only area that you might be able to look at to say, well, that's pretty close is the lineup, is a wash. The other ones, I think you give the nod to Houston in pretty much every area. Now, again, Correa's got a bad back. He missed a ton of the second half. He hit under 200 in the second half of the season.
Who gets to check market manager?
I call that one even. I call that one pretty even. I mean, Hinch has done it, but I think that Cora knows how they're going to manage, knows, again, you know, has some sort of the inside
secrets. There's an advantage there for Cora.
I think so, too, which is why, I'll call that one a draw for now. You know, and again, I just don't know how much Cora is going to be able to influence it if, you know, they're down 5-2 in the late innings. Like, what can you do?
Jason and Bridgewater on that Krejci story. Yes, Jason.
Yeah, all I think is the problem with second line is Krejci. It has nothing to do with the wings. I think a lot of what it has to do is he's very soft. And I think if it was up to Cassidy, Krejci would be gone.
Well, what makes you say that?
Cassidy's talked about Krejci, the way Krejci goes after the pucks, he just seems to shy off. It doesn't.
Okay, I mean, I agree that Krejci. I'm going to cut you off. That Krejci has his holes, and he's gotten softer and slower as he's gotten older. I mean, he's not the same guy. I think that's sort of obvious. I haven't heard any tone from Cassidy. And what you would really hear or see is usage, minutes. Has that really changed? And again, 3 games in, I haven't really been able to dig into it, so maybe the hockey Krishnas can tell me. Has Cassidy started to jerk around with his minutes?
Not that I've noticed.
Or offensive zone starts or things like this? That would be a tell. I haven't read anything like that. I haven't seen anything like that. But again, I haven't fully engaged yet on the Bruins through these 3 games. I didn't really sense it last year. He was their number 2 guy the whole way through. I don't feel like he was ever benched or demoted, or you know, if the coach has a problem with him, he starts skating with, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry on the 3rd and 4th line. That's when you know. Like, Cassidy wasn't afraid to do that with Rask. We knew how he felt about Rask. He benched his ass. And when he came out and gave us off goals, you'd hear Cassidy after the game say we needed a save there. So he was very upfront about Rask. I haven't heard him say the same thing about Krejci.
There was an intervention there.
But, I mean, the tone. I mean, the whole tune. Talk about a guy changing his tune.
Yeah, whether it was Cassidy that did it or Sweeney that did it, or I don't know, maybe Neely did. Who the hell knows? It doesn't really matter to me who did it. There was an intervention there where someone said to him, look, we're paying you a ton of dough. Stop bitching about the players around you. You're supposed to make them better, not the other way around.
Okay, we're putting a 20-second shot clock on Scott and Weymouth because he's our most annoying caller. So I don't want to just
what's the clock set at? Just so I know.
But you got 20 seconds. Go.
Boom. If anybody wants to know who the best hockey player in the world is since 1984, he's in Boston tonight. His name's Connor McDavid. I don't care if you don't like hockey. Check this kid out. Fastest skater, best hands. He led the league in scoring as a 19-year-old on a last-place team. Okay? If you don't...
Good job. That's it. I'm going to cut you off. Connor McDavid. In a league that has gotten hyper-fast and more skilled by the day, this guy stands out for how freaking fast and skilled he is. It's ridiculous. If you've never had a chance to see him play, watch tonight.
Did I read the other day that he doesn't have any goals against the Bruins?
I don't know. How many times have you played him?
Well, a few.
4 at most, right?
I know, but still, for go scoreless in 4 games for him, that's no small thing either.
No, that's true.
Like, so, and I
don't know. They put, so this is interesting. Do they put Char out there against him? How could he possibly keep up with that kid? But maybe, I don't know, maybe just the presence there.
You got me. Again, and there were some comments from him in the last day or so talking about Chara and how he's still a pain in the ass to play against because of the reach and everything else. And Cassidy had said that he'll put a combination of Bergeron and Corrali against him out there tonight. So, it feels like they've done a pretty good job against him, but the Bruins are in a stretcher. They got to win these games. Yeah, Edmonton, and then who do they have next? New Jersey? Like, you get a chance to go 4-1 before you go on the road. You don't spit up these home games.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.